From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced during a visit to Arizona on Monday that the U.S. was officially adopting a policy to separate undocumented families from their children after they crossed the U.S. border. He used language indicating that parents bringing children will be considered human traffickers, saying, quote, "If you're smuggling a child, then we're going to prosecute you, and that child will be separated from you." He added, "If you don't want your child separated, then don't bring them across the border illegally." Human rights groups have slammed the policy, which was already unofficially being implemented. The Department of Homeland Security has confirmed that so far about 700 undocumented immigrants have been separated from their children. My guest is Juan Escalante, communications manager with America's Voice and a DACA recipient. He is also the immigration correspondent for this program. Welcome back to the show, Juan.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, let's look at what it was specifically that Sessions said. The quote that I read to you made it sound like he was indeed contradicting himself. He said, "If you're smuggling a child," and then he said, "If you don't want your child separated." So he indicated that, or at least seemed to imply that parents were smuggling their own children across the border. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, it's no surprise whatsoever that the Trump administration has actually taken an even harder stance on the border, despite the fact that, you know, we have data proving that crossings are at all-time low and that the families coming over to the United States are actually seeking refuge from death, from very, you know, difficult conditions that they're facing in their home countries in Central America. The Trump administration, specifically the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security and the president himself, have made it their mission to criminalize these families and paint them just as they were being described as child smuggling individuals, when all they want is a way for them to seek refuge in the United States and provide a better future for their families and their children, away from any sort of gang violence or any other type of violent activity that may be happening in their home country.
So this particular policy was, as I said, already being implemented unofficially. The Department of Homeland Security confirmed that already 700 people approximately were separated from their children. How exactly, as far as you can tell, under what circumstances is this happening? Is it when immigrant families are being detained within detention centers, children are being separated, or even before they enter detention centers, when they turn themselves in the border, et cetera?
Absolutely. I think something that our viewers ought to be reminded of right now is essentially that this kind of policy is essentially a tool that the Trump administration is hoping to use to deter any sort of what they deem illegal crossings at the border. It must be specifically made that, you know, living in the country without an immigration status is actually not a criminal offense. It's rather a civil offense. So that's number one and first and foremost. But it's also a way for them to try to funnel any sort of individual into ports of entry, so that individuals seeking asylum, seeking to come into the United States, can actually be processed through these points of entry. Now, people may say, well, that sounds a lot better than, you know, paying any sort of coyote or crossing the border and trying to navigate the treacherous terrain out there. But the truth of the matter is that oftentimes what we've seen is that under the Trump administration and previous administrations, the kind of culture at these points of entry of people trying to make their case for asylum or for other type of immigration relief that could potentially benefit them if they have what's known as credible fear of returning back to their home country, it's not exactly being carried out in a fair and unbiased manner. Oftentimes, the kind of application process or the kind of acceptance rates are extremely low, and oftentimes these individuals are being sent back to the dangerous conditions that they're escaping from. Furthermore, I would say, Somali, to address your question, is it's just, you know, when these children and are separated from their mothers or their parents, what's important to remember is that, as John Kelly, the chief of staff, said, is that they're being sent to child care centers or
foster
whatever.
Care?
Exactly, foster care or whatever. And that's essentially the words that he used to describe the separation technique. And I think that or whatever in what the chief of staff is essentially saying is particularly important at a time where the United States cannot track some of the children that they have separated by placing them into forced foster homes and losing track of where these children are actually going after they're being separated.
Right.
And I know that Secretary Nielsen is testifying in front of Congress on Tuesday. This will be available on C-SPAN for people to review. And that's the kind of question that ought to be pressed, not only from this administration, but from this agency as well.
So let's review what John Kelly said in an interview to NPR. He was asked about this policy. He is, of course, the former head of the Department of Homeland Security, currently the chief of staff at the White House. And when he was asked about the issue of children being separated from their parents, he basically said that they were going to be put into foster care. He said the children will be taken care of, put into foster care or whatever, but the big point is they elected to come illegally into the United States, and this is a technique that no one hopes will be used extensively or for very long. So when he says technique, of course, he's implying that this is a way in which the Trump administration is using this separation as a deterrence. So the question of smuggling or human trafficking comes nowhere into it. They seem to be deliberately conflating two very different issues, which is, of course, intended to further criminalize immigrants, right?
Absolutely. And again, this is a consistent trend in which we've seen time and time again the Trump administration trying to use any means necessary to not only deter, you know, border crossings and show the reflection of those numbers at the end of the year in any sort of report that comes out of DHS or from the federal government as strikingly low, but they're trying to muddle the facts here. You know, they're trying to essentially paint women and children as these traffickers who are trying to, you know, commit any sort of like heinous crimes from trafficking drugs or individuals, as opposed to, you know, what they really are, people escaping violence in countries that really could put their lives at danger. So at the end of the day, you know, it's more of the type of culture that we've seen not only in at DHS, but also within this White House. I'm actually being reminded of this New York Times clip that was published a couple of days ago, I believe last week, where essentially it outlined that the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Nielsen, was contemplating leaving her post as the Secretary of Homeland Security at the fact that she was berated and yelled at and screamed at by the president because she was unable to seal the border and continue to plummet down the number of crossings at the border. So, you know, for when you take that kind of interpretation and the view in which the Trump administration sees border crossers, you know, immigrants trying to essentially escape the danger in their home countries and seek asylum in the United States, you're absolutely right. They're trying to conflate two very different things and try to paint a very completely different picture to, you know, everyday Americans that their border is out of control, when in reality the border has been secured, you know, more secure, you know, over the past number of years than any time in the history of this nation.
So is there any way, as far as you know, to trace what has happened to these children? We're talking about at least so far 700, you know, possibly more people having their children separated away from them. I'm assuming there might be lawyers that are helping some of these folks with their cases. It would be really interesting to note or to sort of examine personal cases, individual cases of what has happened to a family when their children have been separated away from them, where those children are taken. You know, as a mother, I cannot imagine what it would be like to have my child taken away from me, not knowing when I was going to see them again, where they were being sent, whether they were going to be treated with care. This, all of this after enduring a life-risking journey to, you know, find safety and security. So do we know of any particular or specific individual stories?
I think there has been some reporting being done from several border agencies that are, you know, helping provide for these individuals and try to make sure that, you know, they're being granted any sort of audience to plead their case and apply for asylum. You know, we spoke about or we saw images of the so-called caravan of migrants that was approaching the border and that Donald Trump and his administration essentially painted as this, you know, essentially anything but scenario of mothers and children and individuals trying to seek a better life and opportunities here in the United States. But at the end of the day, you know, there's been a lot of reporting being done. I point to BuzzFeed and also some other outlets have been able to track some of these stories, and I'm happy to provide copies of these for your viewers, to make sure that, these are the kind of stories that are being told and will continue to be told if these individuals end up in detention over the next couple of weeks. And as the tracking is being done, where these children end up, and there's going to be a lot of questions, that need a lot of answers, not only from the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Borders, but as well of this administration and the way that the federal government is treating these individuals. So I think that, members of Congress ought to take note right now of these opportunities that they're getting, and not only question, the Secretary of Homeland Security and the president about these kind of interactions and where the fate of these children, how they're being treated, but also what are the mechanisms currently in place, to make sure that these individuals are being taken care of, and when and if they're reunited with their families, that they're done, that is done so in a humane possible manner. Because at the end of the day, I just can't, as you mentioned, I just can't imagine, what these individuals, these parents go through. As you said, when their children is being, when their child is taken away from them, and then the government may turn around and say, well, they're being sent to foster care or whatever, and they're not being given a lot of information.
Now, you and I are speaking on Tuesday, and as you mentioned, Department of Homeland Security head Kristen Nielsen is being questioned by Congress as we speak. Our audience will hear this interview after the hearing is over. But in fact, news reports are announcing that about two dozen women with their children who are affiliated with immigrant rights groups attended the hearing and walked out in silent protest when Secretary Nielsen started to speak, as their protest against specifically this policy of separating parents from their children. Let's turn back to the caravan that you mentioned. We'd been covering this caravan by this organization, Pueblos Sin Fronteras, that had essentially attempted to protect groups of people coming from largely Central America to the U.S. border with Mexico, with the hopes that safety and numbers would protect them from the dangerous journey they face, from the dangers of the journey that they face. And some people had begun to be processed for their asylum requests. How much of the president's rhetoric on this caravan has been exposed as, being lies, because he tried to paint them as criminals, but then when reporters showed the images and the videos of these, desperate families, portrayed something, a very, very different story. Shouldn't that have exposed this rhetoric, this language, these heartless policies that the Trump administration and its officials are adopting as lies?
Unfortunately, I believe that we're navigating a period of time where essentially the president is speaking directly to his base, and trying to use mechanisms at his side, whether that may be the Attorney General or the Department of Homeland Security's secretary or beyond, to try to validate his lies and exaggerated rhetoric when it comes to not only immigration but a variety of subjects. He's essentially trying to turn the government into a mouthpiece for whatever it is that his belief may be. And when you look at the images, you're right. You're not looking at hardened criminals. You're looking at people who left everything that they had and took whatever they could on their shoulders, along with children, to come to the United States and say, here I am, I'm escaping, death threats, gang violence in my area, in my home country. I'm willing to go through the legal process. And I think that this is the biggest irony of it all. They say that people, specifically immigrants, should go through the process and get in the so-called line and become legal that way. And even then, when people are trying to come to this country and apply their right way by ports of entry, of which, I will address that there's still people camped out of these ports of entry at the border, essentially stating that the Department of Homeland Security and Customs and Border Patrol are only allowing a select few of individuals who actually be admitted and processed for potential asylum per day. And even then, we try to essentially paint them as criminals, as people that are trying to take advantage or exploit whatever loopholes there may be in the country, when in reality, all they're doing is essentially what they've been told to do, and they're trying to do it the right way, and they're trying to seek a better life and safety, as I keep reminding the audience.
So, Juan, we have talked to you in the past very often about the situation for DACA, which, of course, the Trump administration had canceled after the president had numerous times sort of contradicted himself on DACA recipients. And then we had a big court decision around DACA. Can you give us an update on what the latest situation for DACA recipients like yourself is, as well as prospective new applicants who, had the program been kept intact, would have been eligible?
Absolutely. So there's been a lot of developments in the past couple of weeks when it comes to this program. Number one, we had a third judge essentially state that the government did not roll back the DACA program in a way that was satisfactory with current policy or law. And the judge, a Republican appointee in the second district here, in Washington, D.C., told the Trump administration that they had 90 days to rectify and provide an explanation as to how and why they rolled back this program. And should the judge, like their complaint that the case move forward, but if the judge did not like or found unsatisfactory the response from the administration, that he would essentially consider ordering the federal government to not only to reactivate the DACA program, but reactivate it in its entirety. That means that essentially new applications of people who age into the program, we're talking about high school students at this point in time, could essentially be funneled into the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, the agency under the Department of Homeland Security in charge of processing these applications, and renewals of DACA, of existing DACA applications, will also be in order. And there's also a potential talk of the lesser known provision of this program known as advanced parole that would essentially allow individuals to be granted parole and travel back to their home country, or be allowed to travel abroad under certain circumstances, such as any sort of university-led course, death in the family or extreme circumstances that would also need to be approved by the Department of Homeland Security. I will say that there's a 90-day window. There's a delay or a stay for legal terms out there on this court decision. Right now, I think we're we're approaching the 30-day mark from when this court decision came down. So there's still 2 months until this potential, punishment for the federal government, quote unquote, may be handed down from this federal judge. Although I do personally believe that the federal government will challenge this, will respond in the words of Kristen Nielsen in a previous hearing. I believe it was last week when she told Congress that that the federal government will respond to the judge's request. And then it will be up to the to this judge and in Washington, D.C. to determine whether or not the federal government did this in a capricious way, or it actually did so because of it was causing harm to any sort of the states. And very quickly, I will also interject that we've also seen a lawsuit being led by Texas and a number of states.
Right, that's right.
Six states, right? Essentially suing the Trump administration for allowing this program to continue to exist in some way, shape, or form.
Just as they did with DAPA, the other program that Obama had tried to put into place. And in fact, those states won in their battle in killing DAPA. Yeah.
Correct. Although right now we're talking about a program that, existed, that has a number of beneficiaries. The DAPA program, as some folks may remember, was this program that was essentially a supercharged version of the DACA program that will have protected parents of U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents from deportation if they met certain qualifications similar to those of DACA. That program never saw the light of day, never came online, never saw any sort of beneficiaries. And I think what's different here is that the strategy that's being led by Texas and a handful of states, I will say that the number is substantially lower from previous lawsuits, is essentially that they're trying to enjoin the DAPA decision they're trying to enjoin the fate of DAPA into the DACA program by telling the judge this is happening. The government rolled out this program, but it's still allowing renewals and people to still accept, obtain legal work permits and driver's licenses from us. You need to put an end to this immediately. Right now, I believe that there's some some key court dates to decide the scheduling of this case. Unfortunately, the way that Texas has done this is that it's going to land back into the hands of federal judge Hanen, who essentially is the person who was in charge of killing the DAPA program. But in the meantime, you know, despite all of these two scenarios that are happening at the same time, you know, the 90 days for the government to explain itself and potential revival of the entire DACA program and the Texas lawsuit, in the center of all that is that there's two injunctions, and I believe I spoke to this, I spoke with you about this last time I was in the program. There's two injunctions in place right now in California and in New York, essentially stating that the program must hold up until the courts themselves, four circuits independently, verify that the Trump administration did not terminate them in a political sense to try to enforce this immigration agenda. So therefore, as of right now, despite that all these legal challenges and all these court battles are unfolding, DACA beneficiaries, as myself, can still benefit from the program if they were, one, a previous recipient, meaning that they're applying for a renewal, and two, whether or not they're able to apply on time and afford the $495 renewal fee, as well as meet all the requirements set out for the renewal.
Well, Juan, I want to thank you for that update and for joining us today. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Juan Escalante is communications manager with America's Voice. He's a DACA recipient and the immigration correspondent for this program. We've been discussing the U.S.'s official policy of separating parents from children at the border, as well as the latest update on DACA. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find out more about our program on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.